religion.
One must certainly withdraw it and bring it
back under the control of the self.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
The nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady, but a self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. One who controls the mind, and therefore the senses as well, is called Goswami or Swami. And one who is controlled by the mind is called Godasa, or the servant of the senses. A Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. In transcendental sense happiness, the senses are engaged in the service of Hrishikesha, or the supreme owner of the senses, Krishna. Serving Krishna with purified senses is called Krishna consciousness. That is the way of bringing these senses under full control. What is more, that is the highest perfection of yoga practice.
Very appropriate practical verse. Or this instruction is for all of us, because all the time the mind is going here and there. It is like a hurricane, very difficult to control. But we have to keep practicing. This is what separates those who make progress in spiritual life from those who don't. Everyone's got problems with the mind, but those who keep trying to fix it on the self, they make progress. And those who give up, they just say, well, whatever the mind wants to do, then they don't make any progress. They can't, because the uncontrolled mind is the worst enemy. And that enemy, if you're living with your worst enemy in the same body, and he's in your head, your worst enemy is inside your head, and he's controlling your senses also. You can just imagine what kind of a difficult situation you're in. So the mind must be controlled, and even though it's difficult, Krishna recognizes that. He says, yes, it's difficult to control the mind. He says, but it is possible by constant detachment and regulation. In the very beginning, one has to control this lust by regulating the senses, controlling the mind, by constant practice and detachment. So, practice means practicing to think of Krishna, to engage the mind in Krishna. Savai manah Krishna padaravindayo. And detachment means whenever it goes somewhere it's not supposed to go, pull it back. And praise it when it goes in the right place. When the mind, encouraging the mind, please go and see Krishna. Please think about Krishna. Please hear this nice music about Krishna. So the mind needs to be trained. Vajahure mana shinananda abhaya charanaro vindore dulava manava janama satsange toro e bhava sindure. So he's praying, my dear mind, please take shelter of the fearless lotus feet of Krishna. This is the only place where we'll find satisfaction. Otherwise, no one can be happy. For one whose mind is not controlled, there's no happiness. He's Godas instead of Goswami. So we all have to become Goswami. That means master of the senses. So master of the senses means his mind is under control. If his mind is not controlled, then he's not the master of his senses, because his senses will follow the mind. Mind is superior to the senses. So if the mind is not controlled, then it means the senses won't be controlled.
Sometimes I feel that it's very difficult to follow authority. Especially for me, it's very difficult. And where is the problem? In the mind or in the false ego?
Intelligence. The problem is intelligence, because if one has intelligence, then he knows that this authority is my best friend. He's guiding me through the troubled waters. He's taking me across the ship. He's taking me across the ocean of material existence. Why should I have a problem? If you're on a ship in the middle of the sea, and the captain says, "All hands on board, take that sail and put it there." You say, well, who does he think he is? The captain or something? Yes, he's the captain. And you need to follow his instruction. Why? Because you're in the middle of the sea and there's a storm coming. And you don't know what to do. And if you don't follow his instruction, you'll all drown. That's intelligence. He's already figured it out. And you should figure it out before you get on the ship. You should figure out that there's a captain here and I'm going to have to follow his advice. Even when you get on an airplane, you may think you're on a nice commercial American Airlines, but no. They say at the beginning that it's illegal to disobey the instructions of the airline crew. If they give instructions, you have to follow, even though they're not policemen, and that's part of getting on the plane. It's part of taking the flight. So, if we want to make spiritual progress, it's understood from the beginning we need guidance. We cannot just try to make spiritual advancement by ourselves with our minds. We need guidance. So yes, authorities, you say it like it's a bad word, authority. Why not say it as spiritual authority? Spiritual guides, Vaishnavas, why not say it in a nice way? Your authorities are Vaishnavas, are they not? It is as if a Vaishnava is such an insignificant thing. Is a Vaishnava an insignificant thing? If you take it as an insignificant thing, then he's just like any other Tom, Dick, or Harry on the street, then you haven't understood what is a Vaishnava. That's an important point. To understand, Vaishnava means he's very dear to Krishna. He's following the orders of Krishna. He's the representative of Krishna. And such Vaishnavas, we say every day, Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namonamaha. He is like a desire tree. He can fulfill all the desires of all living entities. He's very compassionate to the fallen soul. So such Vaishnava, we have to take shelter of and take guidance of. Now you may say, well, Prabhupada I can accept. He is a Vaishnava. But others I cannot accept. Well, you have to see if someone is his loyal and faithful representative. If someone's following Prabhupada's instructions, then we accept him also. Yes, question. Microphone. I hit your point.
Like the point you just made. The point you just made about if someone is following. But at the same time, the quality of the instruction, it may not be completely free from the false pride and the disturbances of the mind. And it may not be exactly on the platform of like Rupa Goswami or Srila Prabhupada, or even a more mature devotee, especially those who are may not be as free from mental fluctuations. And in terms of tendency to lord it over.
So what's your point?
So it may make it not as palatable to sometimes follow some instruction. It may be more difficult with some individuals than when others who are more patient and tolerant and other individuals may.
Let me give you an example. First day I came to the temple, after I joined the temple, Vishnu John Swami was the temple commander, as well as other things. And so he gave me instruction. He said, go to the parking lot and find a Kendra, and he'll show you how to wash the vehicles, and you help him wash the vehicles. So I went there, and I went in the parking lot, and I didn't see anybody, just one little boy, about 5 years old. And I said, excuse me, do you know where a Kendra is? He said, I'm a Kendra, 5 years old. I said, you're a Kendra? He said, yeah. I said, well, I'm supposed to report to you, and you're supposed to show me how to wash the vans. So he said, all right, take that bucket there, put some water in, some soap, see that sponge, use that, put the soap on, and then wipe it around. I was marveling. I thought, this is amazing. What a wonderful institution. What an organization where five-year-olds can give such nice instructions. So, we should be so delighted to be the servant of 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 the servant. Not that I have to only work under Krishna. Unless Krishna personally comes and gives me an instruction, I'm not going to follow anybody. No. No, that's not our philosophy. Our philosophy is to be this humble, the servant of the servant. In fact, the more times we can be the servant, the better. The more Krishna is pleased. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, Gopi Bhartur Parakamalayor Dasa Dasa Nudasa. So that is not a valid consideration in devotional service. We take the instructions as they come down through disciplic succession. And if we're fortunate enough to have many dasas above us, many masters above us, then all the better. I'll give you an example. This is a true story. Some disciples were meeting with Prabhupada in Hawaii. And they said, Prabhupada, we have complete faith in you. We'll do whatever you say. But we don't have faith in your GBC secretaries, this governing body commission. So that's the next line. In other words, Prabhupada had established a system of managing the organization and chose some of his disciples to be governing body commissioners. And they were supervising the organization in certain regional areas. So these devotees, they said, Prabhupada, we have faith in you, we'll do whatever you say, but we cannot follow these governing body commissioners. So Prabhupada said, you'll do whatever I say? They said, yes. And Prabhupada said, and if I ask you to follow their instructions, will you do it? And they thought for a little while, and they said, no, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, just see the hypocrisy.
That's very nice in theory, but in practical application, when we're not so advanced in humility in terms of our false ego and we're neophyte, contaminated, and it doesn't, Prabhupada said, the false ego, it doesn't, it's like a snake, it doesn't even have to be attacked, and it can attack without any cause. So our false ego, at the slightest drop of a hat, let alone if we feel we've been, somebody rubs us
trampled
the wrong way.
We've been trampled.
Right, we've been rubbed the wrong way. And so it may become quite a battle for us to be able to act.
So, yes, of course it's difficult. I'm glad you brought that up. It may be difficult, but we have to be very determined to make progress, and that means to overcome the false ego and not act on the bodily platform, but act on the spiritual platform. For example, let's say a devotee is having some difficulty with a spiritual authority for whatever reason. Then he can go to that spiritual authority and he can humbly submit that, "I'm sorry, I'm having some difficulty. Try to go at the right time. I'm having some difficulty. My false ego's rebelling, and maybe you can help me with it," or something like that. Or if he can't go to that devotee, he can go to another devotee. And this way, try to sort it out. Don't just take a very rebellious attitude, but try to work it out. Take it that I'm supposed to be more humble than the blade of grass. I'm supposed to be very gentle and very friendly with the devotees. So if I'm having difficulty, then try to work it. I can give you an example, my own experience. When I was a fairly new devotee, I was assisting the treasurer in the temple. I was helping him count Lakshmi. Lakshmi means money. And, organizing it. And so this particular devotee was very stern, very strong and stern person. So in the course of our activities, he'd say, "Take out the trash, put that over there." He never said please. He never said, "Would you like to?" He just gave orders. So that's fine. But after a while, I had a little difficulty with it. Sometimes, he would say. So it was beginning to trouble me. So finally I went to him and I said, "Can I talk with you?" He said, "Yes." I said, "I'm having a little problem with, I know it's just my false ego, but I'm having a problem. When you tell me to take out the trash, I feel like saying sometimes, 'Why don't you take it out yourself?' I know it's not right, but that's how I feel. So I don't know what to do about it." So he took it very nicely. Of course, he was a very advanced devotee. And he said, "Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe I should be a little more considerate. I didn't realize how it was coming off, and I'll try to improve." Of course, I felt terrible that I had to go to him like that, that I couldn't just take the instructions that he gave and not be on the false ego plan. But it worked out very nicely. So that's an example. Because both parties, you have to take it that the other party is sincere. You have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Don't assume they're not sincere. Assume they are sincere. And assume that they don't have ulterior and bad motives. Assume they do have good motives. But still, if there's some problem, then you have to try to work it out. This is part of the science or the art of remaining and living with devotees. And if we don't learn it, how will we be able to remain with devotees? And if we don't remain with devotees, how will we be able to remain a devotee? Without the association of devotees, who's going to make any advancement? Not possible. So therefore, we have to learn how to remain within the society of Vaishnava devotees. And that's one of the things. We have to be humble. And it's one of the most important aspects, because if we don't stay with the devotees, really, our chanting and our philosophy, our knowledge, all that will not mean very much. Any other questions? Okay. Marianne? Next verse.
Text 27. Translation. The yogi whose mind is fixed on me verily attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He is beyond the mode of passion. He realizes his qualitative identity would be supreme, and thus he is freed from all reactions to past deeds. Purport. Brahma-bhuta is the state of being free from material contamination and situated in the transcendental service of the Lord. Mad-bhaktim labhate param. Bhagavad Gita 18:54. One cannot remain in the quality of Brahman, the Absolute, until one's mind is fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord. Savai mana Krishna padara vindayaho. To be always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, or to remain in Krishna consciousness, is to be factually liberated from the mode of passion and all material contamination.
Yes. So, this is the real definition of yoga, to always have the mind fixed on Krishna. That's a real yogi. Others who are doing something other than fixing their mind on Krishna, they're not yogis. This is real yoga. This is the perfection. And everyone is supposed to become a yogi. That's actually the purpose of life, is to become a yogi. There are some who are, from the very beginning, attracted to yogic principles. Why are they attracted to yogic principles from the very beginning? Who can say?
Because they have made such activities in previous lives.
Yes, previous lives, they made some progress. They practiced yoga before, and now, from their very young age, they're again attracted. They continue where they left off. That's why someone's attracted to yoga principles from the very beginning. If they're fortunate enough to be born in a family of yogis, oh, what a great opportunity. From the very beginning, their parents are practicing yoga, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, giving prasadam, kirtan, worshipping Krishna, bowing down. So they're so fortunate, they immediately take to it. Question?
How we can understand that we are beyond the mode of passion? So
how can we understand that we're beyond the mode of passion?
Yeah.
Well, what are the symptoms of the mode of passion? Do you know what they are? What are the symptoms? Who can tell us some of the symptoms of the mode of passion?
He's a person in the mode of passion. He's always, in the West, we the term the rat race. He's always trying to one up somebody else. He's always trying to lord it over. He's always trying to achieve some material gain, profit, fame, adoration, adulation. Like we see this in the big companies or in the baseball. How I'm going to beat the other guy, and lust for materials.
The question: how do you're beyond passion? It means when you're beyond these things, when you don't care for those things. Now, you could also not care for those things and be in ignorance. So it doesn't necessarily mean just because you don't care for them that you're transcendental to them. You may be in ignorance. But a person in goodness also doesn't care for them. And a person in transcendence doesn't care. So there's three persons who don't care for those things. And one that does. So you could be any of those three. Now which one do you want to be? You can be the one in goodness who doesn't care for passion. Or you can be the one in transcendence that doesn't care for passion. Or you can be the one in ignorance who doesn't care for passion. And then they all have their symptoms too. Like the Gita describes, what is a person in transcendence? What is a person in goodness? And what is a person in ignorance? So you look at the symptoms and see where you fit in. You can make a chart. Ignorance, goodness, transcendence. And you can see which qualities you're developing. And you can see where you fit in.
Next verse, text 28, translation. Thus, the self-controlled yogi, constantly engaged in yoga practice, becomes free from all material contamination and achieves the highest stage of perfect happiness in transcendental loving service to the Lord. Purport. Self-realization means knowing one's constitutional position in relationship to the Supreme. The individual soul is part and parcel of the Supreme, and his position is to render transcendental service to the Lord. This transcendental contact with the Supreme is called Brahma Samsparsha.
Questions? Yes, here.
Many times we meet on the street people and they don't understand that point that we are the individual soul and parcel and parcel of the Supreme, and they don't understand this point, and the question is how to give or describe on give them this realization.
They don't understand that the individual soul is part and parcel of God.
Yes.
And how to help them understand? Is that your question?
Yes. How they can it realize if only by experience it, or also by the knowledge?
Can they understand it by knowledge, or do they have to experience it? Well, at least in the beginning, they can understand by knowledge, by hearing. Hearing is the best way to understand, because by hearing, if we accept that, just like if the father tells the little child, this is a tape recorder, then the child understands, this is tape recorder. Just by hearing. He believes. He has complete faith in the father. If the father says this is tape recorder, he believes. So that's perfect knowledge. If his father gives him the correct knowledge, it's perfect then. All he has to do is say, this is tape recorder. And if he goes to someone else, some visitor comes in the house and the little child goes up and says, this is tape recorder. It's perfect knowledge.
And what with the people which they take knowledge from other source and they don't believe it?
I'm sorry, what?
They take the knowledge from the other source. Like Christians, or like, I give you an example, they don't believe it. Because they big Bibles.
Who doesn't believe what?
The meat eating is not good. Eh? They don't believe it.
Who?
Christians.
Christians don't believe that meat eating is not good.
Yes.
So?
Because they have faith in another kind of scriptures.
Wait a minute now. We were talking about how do they understand that is hearing, you're saying is hearing, it has to be realized that hearing from this very good from the beginning, to hear from proper authority. If they're not hearing from proper authority, in other words, one has to be able to distinguish who is the proper authority. Okay? Question here?
One thing, I'm from more of a Christian background, and God led me to come here. One thing to help you understand when you're talking to Christians is what they have been taught is what they know, just like what you have been taught is what you know. They do not understand that Christian is Christ. If you can tell them that and help them to see what's going on, that God loves all His creation, that He reached out to them, and they know Him by one name, and other people know Him by another name, another by another, another by another. Help them understand that they're not the only ones. They think that they are alone, many of them, that they are it, and this is a fright. Partly why they will not accept, because they don't know anything else, and to them it's like something alien or so foreign to them that to them it hardly even makes any sense. Except if they come in contact with God, and then God can open their mind and open their understanding. But this is a very small thing that you do not see in most Christians. Most Christians say that they are followers of Christ, followers of Christians. If ask and He would tell them, then they would know. But they are not, and it is hard for them to receive because they do not know. Because it also, what you're trying to share with them is foreign to anything that they've ever been. It's like what he was saying, okay, you have someone brought up in yoga, okay, the child has this excellent example, okay. The only example they have is what, you know, their parents have taught them, what other people have taught them around them. Go out and talk to that person. They're looking at you like, huh? They're totally confused at what you're saying. They're totally misunderstanding unless you can somehow relate to them. Then it's extremely hard because have nothing, no common ground, no background.
Thank you very much. Okay, next verse. Text 29. Translation. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. Purport. A Krishna-conscious yogi is the perfect seer because he sees Krishna, the Supreme, situated in everyone's heart as Supersoul, Paramatma. Ishvara sarva-bhutanam hrida-shir-juna-tishtati. The Lord in His Paramatma feature is situated within both the heart of the dog and that of the Brahmana.
Yeah, this Paramatma, or Super Soul feature, sometimes is called the Holy Ghost. You know, the Lord within the heart. He's giving us direction. He's in every soul. He's in everyone's heart. All living entities. So there are three features of the Absolute Truth. One is the Super Soul within the heart. That is called Paramatma. One is the all-pervading aspect of the Absolute Truth, which includes everything. So you could say everything is God, because it's true, everything is God. How can it not be God? Where does it come from? If it comes from Him, it must be Him. And the third feature is called the Bhagavan feature. That, by the way, that second feature that we described was called Brahman. And the third feature is called Bhagavan, which means the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who abides in His own abode with the beautiful transcendental form of transcendence and eternity and bliss, standing in His threefold bending, playing on His eyes like lotus garland, swinging around His neck, Shubha gem, beautiful silk, and in this way described. This is Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So those three features of the Absolute Truth taken together give one the complete understanding. If one only understands one aspect, then that's good, but of course it's not complete. If one only understands the Brahman feature, then his knowledge is not complete. He doesn't know about Paramatma and Bhagavan. Next text.
Text 30. Translation. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me.
Because we see him everywhere because, I'll give you an analogy. When, let's say a mother, she has a child, baby child, and somehow or other that child is lost. Just imagine, the child is lost. So she's always thinking about her lost child, all the time. Child, where's the child, where's the child? Always think. Then if she sees one of his little shoes somewhere, oh, my child. Just by seeing that little shoe, she's so reminded. It's such a dramatic. So in the same way, one who is in love with Krishna, he sees Krishna in everything. Thank you very much. Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.